Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello there, welcome back to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. It's episode 101, and my guest is Ian Lee, Ian Leaf, as we used to call him on this morning, Richard, not Judy. We are putting all this out for free, as usual, on audio and on video. We haven't thought of any way to pay for it yet, so if you want to help us pay for this series, you can go to www.gofasterstripe.com/badges. All the money made on badges in June and July will go to help fund this, so that's both monthly and one-off. Also, if you go to Go Faster Stripe, you could buy this, the Rahalastapa, stop saying that, you people down there, Kickstarter DVD. This is a DVD of me interviewing myself here on the stage of the Leicester Square Theatre for an hour in front of a frankly confused audience. So if you would like to see that, then that's this DVD is the only way to do it. There's also the backstage interviews from season 7 that you can only get if you're a badge subscriber. And if 300 people were to buy, is it that few? Could be. 300 people were to buy this, then we would pay for all the expenses of this series. That's not much, is it? So if you haven't got it yet, why don't you buy this or just buy a badge or just enjoy this stuff for free until we go bankrupt and can't do any more. Let's listen to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. The big question that everyone's asking is, which this series, which Rich will it be? Will it be Fat Rich or slightly less Fat Rich? Please welcome him. He's a man who spent his Saturday morning kneeling on the floor between Bonnie Langford and a woman off of Towie, pretending to move a small piece of paper around as if it was a human being. I think that happens. Please welcome, which one will it be, Richard Herring? It's Fat Rich. We take it in turns. Fat Rich does one series and slightly less Fat Rich does the next series. Got very different characters. I'm more jovial due to my fatness. Welcome to the show. Welcome to series 9 of Richard Herring's Leicester and episode 101 of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was down at the disco the other day and there was some kids on rollerblades. They had like headbands on. They called it Rahulastapa. I don't know where that's signed. So it's been ages since they've been going out every week. So it feels like to you like they've been happening all the time. But it's been ages since I've done this. I have no idea what I'm doing anymore. I've forgotten how to do it. It's been the celebrity year of death so far, isn't it? In 2016, Peter Schaefer died today. Yeah, thought I'd break that to you. He wrote Equus and Amadeus. He didn't write that one. He's not that good. He's no fat, but he's dead as well, I have to tell you. So, and thanks to Peter Schaefer, I have seen Harry Potter's penis. So, you know, that is, he didn't die in vain. That was the best thing he did. So it's an awful year. So we'll probably get talking about that. I was on the Saturday show on Saturday. That's when they should put it out. It's convenient. With Bonnie Langford, who I love, from Just William. Some of you remember. You'll remember from Just William. The rest of you remember from Doctor Who. Or Gypsy. All sorts of things she's been in. And Fern McCann, who apparently is... She's from reality TV and Russell Brand's penis. I was quite ill. I had the shits on Saturday, I have to tell you. And I might have hallucinated this, but I did. I said I'll do anything to get back on TV, but I was kneeling on the floor between the two of them, manipulating the legs of a paper man while an orangutan picked at my hair. That didn't happen, did it? That was just a dream. There's lots of great things have happened in medicine. There's been a penis transplant in America. I don't know if you saw this, which is a worrying thing. It's good if you have lost your penis in an accident or a botched circumcision or in action, you've got cancer of the penis, if you've had that, then this is good news for you. You can do penis transplants. I'm worried. I've got a very lovely penis. And what if rich people start saying, I can just change my penis whenever I want, like it's Wurzel Gummidge's head? They'd come after this beauty. It's like a fashion accessory. So it's a worrying time for me and the men with the beautiful penises, that we'll be harvested. Who will be in control of that? That's the question. So we may talk about that. Organs can be grown inside pigs as well now. But when will hands be grown inside pigs? That is the question. When that happens, all my dreams will come true. I've been on holiday in Cornwall recently. When I arrived at Cornwall, it's lovely. You're on holiday. Everyone's friendly down in Cornwall. We went across to the pub to have some food, and we got in there. We went in. I've got a small baby. We went into the restaurant, and they said there was no tables, even though there was no one in there. But we could go in the bistro, which was literally just some chairs over there. So we went in there, and there was a couple of middle-aged ladies in there. And my daughter, she's very clever for her age. She's 15 months old. She picked up a napkin. She had a bit of a sniffy nose and blew her own nose. And I was very impressed with that. And then I said, oh, go on, blow your nose. And she blew her nose, and I thought, that's amazing. She's a very clever girl. And I said, go on, look, Phoebe, look at your bogeys. And then these two women who were eating in there said, do you mind? People are eating in here. Which, you know, I thought was a bit of an overreaction. It was a charming moment. But I realised I'd overstepped a mark. And I said, I apologised. And the woman said, I should think so. I can't believe I didn't. I sort of sat there and just laughed and smirked at my wife, who was furious. But that is not the way to accept an apology, is it? I should think so. That hasn't happened since the 1970s. So I was annoyed by that. This is what's been happening to me. And if you're a fan of Me 1 versus Me 2 snooker, then... I have been recognised as a transgressive artist, and I'm genuinely, at the end of July, I will be performing three frames of Me 1 versus Me 2 snooker live at an arts festival called Tempting Failure. The act before me is a man who cooks his own faeces. He poos in a pot and then cooks it and offers it to you to eat. And then I will be playing snooker. It's the best thing that has ever happened to me. In the world of transgressive art, you know, someone who doesn't cook their own shit, he's the really transgressive one. And they go, well, at what point will you be cooking your shit during the snooker? I go, well, I probably won't cook it at all. I'll probably just hold it in until afterwards. Though I think Me Too might try and wee in a cup and then trick me wanting to drink in it. That is my... We'll see how that goes. So do buy tickets for that. There's lots of great... I was hoping to get Grayson Perry on this series. It's not going to happen this series, but I will hopefully get him on next series, and we'll talk about our... I'm hoping to win the Turner Prize with this. Genuinely, I'm serious about it. And you can only win the Turner Prize before you're 50, so I've got to get a shift on. Anyway, look, there's loads of stuff, because someone interviewed Jodie Foster, and lots of people are stealing my questions, but they asked Jodie Foster whether she preferred a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispensed sun cream, and Jodie Foster went for the sun cream armpit because she's quite fair-skinned. So there you go. So if you do bump into a celebrity you think is too big to appear on this podcast, then do ask them some of the emergency questions and film it so we can find out. But someone who's definitely not too big to appear on this podcast I was thinking actually of forming a double act with this first guest, but I've got quite a good name for it. We could call it Ian and Richard. That's what I was thinking. So it's, people would like that. He is probably best known for the Channel 5 show Cats Make You Laugh Out Loud. Don't laugh at that. It's a very serious documentary about mental illness. That is, it's about someone who can't see a cat without laughing out loud, whatever the circumstances. So it was actually a terrifying documentary. Will you please welcome Ian Lee, ladies and gentlemen? It's Ian Lee. Here he is. Welcome.
I've never listened to this show. What's it like? Fun, huh?
It is.
In for a good time? Great.
So you are, as I found out, I went on your show last week, and I found that you're the wild man on radio.
This is the show I do. I do a late night show on Talk Radio, which is an offshoot of Talk Sport.
Yeah.
And they have the Talk Sport mentality. And they've got this jingle, the wild man of radio is back. And I keep saying, can we get rid of that? Because it's shit. And they say, yeah, we'll get rid of it. Don't worry. And then I thought it had gone. And then they played it just as Richard Herring is coming on. Right? And we have beef. And the beef will be discussed here. And I'm thinking, right, I've got to look cool in front of Rich. Got to look cool in front of him. Then they play that, and I'm thinking, oh, for fuck's sake. Everything he said about me on TV in the 90s is coming true. And I heard those things you said about me on TV in the 90s.
You're the only one who watched it, obviously.
Yes. So.
I was scared. I thought you might grab me and skip. You were wild. You were quite polite. So Ian Lee, if that is your real name.
Well, what do you mean by real name?
I mean, what, the name you're christened with?
Well, no, in that case, it's not my real name.
No.
But it's my real name because I changed it by deed poll.
Oh.
Paid £36. It's the most empowering thing you can do. You think, you go on, you type in your name, you type in what you want your name to be, you pay £36, you're legally, you're a different name.
Yeah.
Straight away.
What, were you wiping out some horrible trauma?
Do you know what? Past? I kind of, all right. Interesting, I didn't change the Ian bit, which is a terrible name. Three vowels.
I could have spelled it right the
Fuck
second
off.
Time, right?
I spell it properly. I-A-I-N, right? But even then, it's still three kind of, you know, three of the lesser vowels and an N, and it's just, there's no oomph to it. I changed my last name. Lee was my middle name, right? I changed my last name because no one could spell it, no one could say it. And because I didn't get on with my dad, that was kind of the deciding.
That's what I suddenly realised halfway through this question.
Well,
so I thought I would address it.
I see your kids who don't realise they've got cancer, and I trump you with falling out with my dad for many years. And so I changed it. So it was okay. It was Rugby.
Yeah,
Ian Rugby. But you try spelling it.
He's reading from a book.
It's like, I'd have pronounced it Rougevi.
Exactly, that was another reason I changed it.
Yeah.
Because cunts like you. I'm joking, guys, I'm joking. It was primarily because I didn't get on with my dad.
I'm straight, usually you've got to wait for about an hour before you get into this.
Well, I did Adam Buxton's podcast two weeks ago, so I'm kind of in that vibe of just going.
Yeah, I was annoyed because I booked you, and then the next day the Adam Buxton one came out and you were on it. I thought, that's screwed that, isn't it? Can't do it. And he's got Doc Brown on as well. He had Doc Brown, and then he had
Doc
Brown.
Now, Doc Brown's, he's a pop singer, is he?
He's a comedian, rapper, actor.
A comedian and a rapper.
He's the brother of Zadie Smith.
She's a writer.
Yeah.
I know her. I don't know Doc Brown. I won't be downloading that one.
Okay.
I won't be downloading.
He's a very interesting gentleman.
Well, I might check it out.
Should come along and see it next week.
Sounds like a good listen.
you grew up, and usually I do a thing on Wikipedia citation needed that Andy MKH reminded me of today. But there's no citations required on your website, on your Wikipedia page, but there is expansion.
Okay, what do you want to expand on? Have you really just done your research by going on fucking Wikipedia? Yeah. Jesus Christ, well, I know one initially thing you're going to ask me, then it's not true.
Okay, well, we'll see. Wait and see. all we find out from Wikipedia is that you were born in Slough and you went to the William Herschel School.
I went to the Sir William Herschel Grammar School, I'll have you know.
Yeah?
Yes.
And William Herschel came from Slough as well.
And do you know what he discovered?
A Uranus.
Thank you very much indeed.
We should do a double act.
It's true, yeah. What a fun guy to name a school after. Loads of kids just, you know, excited about Uranus. It's incredible. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I read a book about him, though. He's an amazing guy, Herschel. And his sister was also...
Why did you read we had to read a book before we went there.
I wasn't bothered about it.
We had to do a summer project on him, and I didn't even read a book about him.
It's a really good book. I can't remember. Does anyone know what that book's called about all the Victorian... It's about Davy and... Come on, one of you nerds knows. The age of...
Do any of my nerds know? I've got some of my nerds.
I think it's mainly your nerds, and that has brought down the intellectual... use for some reason. Yes, I knew what they did.
They can only communicate via phone. They'll phone up later on and say, I've got it.
He's a fascinating man.
I won't be reading it.
No, you should read it. It'd be good. So... Do you remember when Buddy's Song was filmed in Slough? Were you living there then?
Buddy's Song, right, yes, I do remember when Buddy's Song. This is the film with Chesney Hawkes and Roger Daltrey. And I don't know why that's eliciting. But Chesney Hawkes, I Am the One and Only, that's where that song came from. Yes, they filmed some of it in ABC Guitars on the Farnham Road, just around the corner from where I used to work in B-Jams. And they filmed Buddy's House... was just down the road from me. I think it was on Monksfield Way, actually, and it was Peter Britt's house.
Oh.
A little bit of trivia there. Peter here tonight.
That one hit off quite nice, didn't it? I took a chance.
Yeah.
Thought you lived there at that time. I did some research on Slough. So with that, it's a bit more we can add. Ian Lee, who was born in Slough and lived near to the house in which... Chesney Hawkes' family.
That is correct.
Roger Daltrey was his dad.
That is correct. I met Roger Daltrey once. You ever met Roger Daltrey?
I haven't, no.
He's tiny. Yeah. He's really tiny. And it was some awards do, right? And Roger Daltrey was there. And I fucking loved The Who. I got to introduce The Who on stage at the Royal Albert Hall once. It was the best gig ever. And I also had to introduce BDI, which was the worst gig ever. But, you know. And Roger Daltrey was backstage. I didn't speak to him that night because I was too terrified. But then I saw Roger Daltrey backstage at some radio awards doing. He was about to give out an award. And I thought, fucking hell, this is Roger Daltrey. He's there. I've got to say something to him. And all I could think of was to say, he was, all right, Roger, I really like your music in The Who. That was it. But basically saying, your solo music is shit. But in The Who, I really like your music. I really liked your music in The Who. I mean, and he went, all right, mate, yeah, thanks. And I walked off feeling like a twat.
That was quite a stupid
thing. It was really stupid. Very rarely do I get flustered by celebrities, but Roger Daltrey flustered me.
I would have said, you're Chesney Hawke's dad from Buddy's Song. What's been going on since then?
Where is he?
When's Buddy's Song?
Did anyone see that? Did anyone actually see that film, Buddy's Song? Do you fancy watching it one night?
Yeah, let's go and watch it together. I tell you, I watched About Time last night.
What's that? Oh, the time travel rom-com.
Richard Curtis. I like watching Richard Curtis films because they usually annoy me.
Yeah.
When I've said this before, but when I was watching the one about Love Actually on my own.
Made a film about Love Actually.
I started... weeping uncontrollably on the floor and
really?
Thought I would never stop crying again.
I've not seen
not
it.
Not because of the film. Well, the film depressed me and then it made me realise how vacuous my life was. Not because of the film, just because I was sitting watching
Love
Actually.
But why was your life so... But
I can't remember. All I remember is weeping whilst watching Love Actually.
But was the vacuity
not like,
around
oh, this is moving, like... Ah! And as I was crying, thinking, I don't think I'm ever going to stop crying. I did stop, though.
That's just a minute ago.
There's a message of hope for you. So,
I don't think I've only ever seen... Four Weddings and a Funeral.
That's good, that one.
That was good. That was, yeah. I enjoyed that when it came out. I like time travel films, but I wouldn't want to watch a time travel rom-com. I watched The Time Traveller's Wife, and that was shit.
Yeah.
I do like a good time travel film.
Well, I'm obsessed with time travel, and because I think I can do it. And About Time is a very, very poor... I mean, I've talked about Goodnight Sweetheart a lot on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, of course. It goes back in time and invents the Beatles.
There's now the American Goodnight Sweetheart, 11-22-63.
What's your top three time travel films?
They're all quite bad. I don't think many of them are very good.
No?
I like the original Time Machine.
Okay.
With Rod Serling in it. Yeah. Not Rod Serling in it, Rod... Taylor, innit? Still alive, I think, Rod Taylor. Am I right? Not after this year, right? 2016.
We're coming for you, Taylor. You're dead.
I like the bad ones, and it's quite bad,
yeah.
About Time, because this guy can travel in time back in his own life, a bit like Quantum Leap.
Yeah,
except it's actually within his own life. But he just doesn't use it very efficiently, and he does it to basically rape a woman. But to rape a woman that he's already going to have sex with.
That's the time traveller's wife. He does that. He goes back and grooms a young 8-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And then she becomes older. So then he's groomed her, then has sex with her.
And
when
the
she's
beauty
a woman.
Of being a time traveller is you can just nip straight to groom him at 8. Nip straight to 18.
I don't know if that's necessarily a beauty.
Just straight to then. Right, no, you can wait till 18. Take right to their 16th birthday.
Wow.
If you're a paedophile time traveller, I'm not saying for me. That's the beauty of that, if you are a paedophile time traveller who wants to stay within the strict bounds of the law.
Technically not a paedophile.
You can do all the flirting while they're all right, going get so you get all worked up.
Yeah.
And then
well, you're jumping about through time.
To 16.
Yeah. We have to destroy this technology. We have to go back in time and destroy this technology before Glitter gets his hands on it.
Yeah.
Imagine the mayhem.
Yeah. Anyway, no, I haven't seen... I don't think I've seen Buddy Song. Julia Sawala's in it. So I'm surprised I haven't seen it, but...
You should watch Primer.
Yeah, just Julia Sawala in that.
You should watch Loose Women, sorry. If you're just basing your viewing habits on Julia Sawala, then I think Loose Women. Or is that Nadia?
It's Nadia.
God, you really do know your facts.
I know that family quite well because I went out with Julia Sawala for 18 months.
Did you?
After I did loads of jokes about wanting to go out with her.
Hang on a second. So you did loads of jokes about Julia Sawala.
I was sort of like the time traveller.
And went out with her. He's just done a 5-minute piece about going back in time and grooming children and then appearing on their 16th birthdays. And as I think you said... Wow.
No, there's not a court in the land can touch me. It's a romantic story in the Richard Curtis universe.
True. He's got them on a technicality there, a time technicality.
Did you know that Brian Connolly from The Sweet, Ernie Wise, Ronnie Cray, Princess Margaret are all died or were cremated in Slough? Did you know that? I didn't just look at your Wikipedia page, Ian. I looked at Slough's Wikipedia page as well.
I don't live in Slough anymore.
I know, but...
I haven't lived in Slough for 33 years.
I'm trying to expand your early life. It requires expansion.
Okay.
All we know is you're born in Slough and went to William Herschel School.
Well, that...
Doesn't even say Annie made a joke about Uranus every day when he went in.
Did it pretty much every day. Okay, yes. I did not know that fact about Slough. Next Slough fact.
Brian Connolly from The Sweet. Connolly.
His brother's Taggart.
It is. They both died of alcoholism. Because they were half-brothers. They knew they were brothers, but you look them...
You could tell.
You could tell.
Now you can.
But he was one of the first people I fancied, Brian Connolly.
Really?
In The Sweet, yeah.
There was the blonde, lustrous blonde locks.
I thought he was a girl, but you know.
Are you going to invent a time machine to go back and bomb The Sweet? Is that what's...
And Les Gray from Mud. Before he went off the boil
about
as well.
Mud. I was reading a lot about Mud today. I was reading a book that dealt with Mud. Yeah, I was actually. It was quite a good book. But anyway, it's irrelevant to this slightly tense.
Nothing is irrelevant. Nothing is irrelevant. Within the confines of this Leicester Square Theatre podcast, everything is allowed.
At what point do I stop being terrified of you?
You're fine. I like you.
We've
made friends backstage.
Well, you say that.
I'm being cheeky.
You say we made friends. I had my fingers crossed behind my back the whole time. There was no friendship there. We, you used to slag me off on your show.
Oh, hardly.
Well. But look at the good grace with which I accept it 16 years later on. And we've met a couple of times.
Yeah.
A couple of times a few years ago when I was kind of dipping my toe in at doing stand-up again, but I didn't like it, so I stopped doing it. And it was, I did a couple of gigs with you and a couple with Stuart, actually. And he was a nice guy. And and every time I saw that one of you on the bill, I would do my best to kind of... I don't think we spoke. I think I kind of avoided you because I was terrified of you. But we did a TV. We did one TV show together. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it would have been 2000, 2001 at the Edinburgh Festival.
It was 2001. Because I was doing Christ... I checked my Ian Lee hate book what? Of hate.
I'd forgotten about it until someone very kindly tweeted both of us. Hey, guys, remember when you did this? And it is one of the fucking worst car crashes of TV. And I've driven quite a few car crashes of TV. It was one of the worst things I've ever done in my life. And we were...
Did you watch the 11 o'clock show?
Now, no. I was too busy spending.
Sorry, it just came.
Too busy
back.
Spending the thousands of pounds I
got.
Per
we
week
worked.
I got.
We found out how much
I got more
paid.
Money.
He got a lot more money than more I money. Did.
I'm really proud of the 11 o'clock show.
Yeah.
And I'm aware of my place in it, and I'm aware that I am the weak link in the chain of that was Sasha and Ricky and Mackenzie and Dom Jolly and Charlie
Brooker. Dom Jolly's the weak link in that.
Jimmy Carr and the Tea Lady. I'm aware of my place beneath all those. But I love the 11 o'clock. I was 25 years old. I've been signing on. I'd had to move back to my mum's. I was skinned. And they kind of said, do you want to come and do a TV show where you sort of, we're going to rip off Chris Morris and you're going to be a poor man's Chris Morris, but do you fancy it and we'll pay loads of money? I went, yeah, fuck.
Well, can I ask that? How did you, because you weren't doing stand-up then, or were you?
I was sort of doing stand-up.
Right.
I was sort of doing stand-up. I've been doing it for years, but I wasn't very good. I got lucky and I'd made friends with Mackenzie
right.
Crook, and he kind of took me under his wing. So we did a couple of Edinburgh shows together, and I was in a different. He was in a different league to me. He was brilliant, and he was very generous with his time with me. So I was doing stand up. I was also doing a little bit of really shit local radio.
Right.
I had this terrible agent whose name I won't mention, but you may have come across him at some point in the 90s, and he got me this. Gig at FM 103 Horizon, today's better music mix. And I was Ian in Black Thunder, and I had to drive around during the breakfast show in a black Jeep, right? And they would say, let's find out what Ian in Black Thunder's up to now. Ian, where are you? And usually I was on some shitty estate in Milton Keynes trying to persuade people to come and be on the radio. It was fucking horrible. And I left. I quit after 6 months. And the week I was leaving, a fax came through from Talkback, the company that made the 11 o'clock show, said, we are making a new TV show, a topical comedy, satirical show. We're looking to see anybody. I think it said that, we're looking to see anybody. And so I thought, I'll go for this. And if I don't get this, I'm going to knock it on the head and I'll go and get a proper job doing all that shit. So I got that and I went and did that.
Wow.
But I'm aware that it's hit and miss. And I've seen bits of them over the last few years or so, and they're hit and miss. And I look like I look like Skeletor. It's terrible. Dark days, guys. Dark days. Don't do drugs, kids. And they're hit and miss. And I'm aware that I was the weak link, but I was 25. And
I don't think that's fair. I mean, I think we took the picture. Well, it must have been on our last series because it was 1999, and that's when we were, me and Stu were about to stop working together and stop working almost forever. And I think we were just, as I was saying to you, I think we looked at the 11 o'clock show and thought, they just kicked Channel 4 behind show when it works, when it doesn't work, they're backing it. And the BBC were moving us around in the schedules. Mm. And if there was sport, we'd get cancelled and they didn't really like us and they weren't giving us any support. So I think we were just jealous that there was a show that we, because I suppose it was that element of it. It felt like ours was a show where we had a team that were writing it who loved what they were doing.
Yeah.
And the 11 o'clock show felt like what it was, which was a show written by loads of different people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And some of it really hit and some of it didn't hit,
yeah.
as is the way with all those shows.
Yeah.
But so it just, we were just jealous, I think, really.
But But it upset me when you slagged me off on telly, as it would do. And yet, no, it did. But I was doing the same thing about other people. Do you know, it was that weird thing of I was being incredibly rude about other people on that show.
Yeah.
But then when someone did it to me, it upset me. And I found the whole thing very confusing. You know, did you like being... I hated being recognised.
Yeah, it didn't happen very much. So
oh, come on.
There was one time where I sort of didn't mind it because it didn't happen that much.
Yeah.
But there was one time I was walking down the street. It was in central London and then there was a group of lads on the other side of the road and they went, "It's that guy off the telly. Let's get him." And they looked really hard, these guys, and they were on the other side of the road, and I just carried on walking, and I didn't run, they didn't come and get me,
no.
But if they'd wanted to get me, they could have just loved me so much they wanted to get me, you know, take a Richard Curtis kind of way. I didn't mind, I'm sort of glad that we didn't ever really... as a double act, didn't really go over that hump into becoming famous, really.
No.
So the people who knew us were... And it's the same with this now. The people who recognise me from this aren't very far and few in between, luckily. And so they're kind of quite nice. They're often listening to me. If you're listening to this now and you're listening to me and you see me, whoa! That often happens, though, you know, like they're listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
And then I walk past and they go, whoa!
You really are keen to get up the iTunes chart. You do make it personal.
It's a little service I give.
A guy tried to punch me once when we were doing the Emma Cox show. Some old guy. We were doing the Vox Pops. So I had the, you know, we were asking him, I don't know, about would you eat Princess Diana's DNA or something. We did some of that shit. I don't know what we were doing. And this guy went, "I know you fucking are. You're a cunt." And went to smack me one.
Yeah. Well, it was quite, you know, it was, I think that's, you were exactly right. It was sort of, we felt, because we'd obviously worked with Chris Morrison, worked on the hour and everything, we felt like it's someone, an executive, and I don't think we'd have blamed any of the people in it, has looked at Chris Morrison and misunderstood what's funny about him.
Yeah.
And so said, let's all just be horrible to people, which isn't what Chris Morris did. And then, but Balls of Steel was much, much more a horrible show. I think Adam, in the Adam Buxton podcast, talks about shit on a microphone.
That was Balls of Steel, wasn't it? That wasn't an 8 o'clock show. I mean, we did some terrible stuff. We did some stuff that... makes me very uncomfortable, but you know, most of it I'm kind of proud of, but I can't imagine being that 25, 26 year old boy and doing that stuff. It's fucking terrifying going out on the street and saying, you know, making jokes. We had one of the worst things I can remember. We had a counter going off in the background during a show and it got to about 432 and we went, "That's the Harold Shipman counter." Fucking hell. And at the time, we're going, "Yeah, okay, brilliant. You want me to say that? Brilliant." And I would say it because I didn't know, you know. And I was kind of, we talk about characters and stuff. I was playing that character. They wanted me to intone things in the way that Chris Morris did. You know, they wanted it to be that obvious, the suits and all of that shit. And they kind of told me how to behave. That wasn't what I was, but I didn't know what to do. You know, I was kind of a happy-go-lucky stoner and they told me exactly what to say and do and I did it, you know.
It's interesting, though, because I think it does, you know, like I think we were talking before again, because Ian arrived quite early. We've been chatting. We should have taped all the other stuff.
You shouldn't meet the people before
they
arrive.
No, I shouldn't, because then I don't know what I've said on here. But it's, you know, but you've set up a persona, and then it's very hard to shift that persona.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think similarly, in Lee and Herring, I played a stupid character who liked having sex with animals, and that's only half true. But I think it means that now, still, some people treat me like people who I'm trying to, you know, executives and things think I'm stupid because they remember being the stupid character. And you were a very abrasive character that was sort of meant to be sort of not liked.
I suppose obnoxious. Yeah.
And then that follows you through.
And 2 months ago, I didn't get a job because the head of the channel was worried that I was still that. But what if it was a live show? But what if this? What if he says something rude on air to be outrageous? Well, that program was 15 years ago. I've got kids and a mortgage now. You know, I'm not. I want to work. I don't give a shit. So
because you're the wild man of radio, that's
I'm the wild man. I'm the wild man. There's literally nothing wild.
You can't be controlled.
No.
But I think I think that's what's interesting is that I think we did. There was this sort of antipathy to the 11 o'clock show from us. But looking back at that interview, and we talked about this backstage, but looking back at that
this
interview...
This was at the Edinburgh Festival. This was like the Perrier Awards winners night or something. And it was like 11 at night or something.
Yeah, everyone was drunk. I was very drunk. I mean, I'm bloated in it because I'm drinking so much at that time that you can... You know, I look worse than I do now.
I was very skinny in it for reasons. I wasn't eating.
And so, you know, but we were called over, I was just called over to sit down, and then I sat there and you sat there, and we were both thinking, oh no, it's that prick. But I think there was a sort of entitled arrogance to me that I thought, I think it's just interesting as time passes, you look back and go, hold on, but the thing that we had a beef about was a kind of imaginary competitiveness between the two of us.
In that thing, you had an entitled arrogance, and I immediately came in on the defensive, and I thought it was you that... I haven't watched it for years. I thought it was you that got the first dig, but apparently it was me. You reminded it was me, and in a very badly worded question. And from then on, it was just horrendous. But we on the 11 o'clock show were jealous of you because you were kind of the cool kids. You and Stuart, we perceived as being like the kind of the intellectual... you know, kind of clever comedy, and we were going around talking about tits and bum holes, which is nice. I like tits and I like bum holes, but, you know, we were jealous of you. So it's interesting to know that you kind of perceived the support we were getting from the channelers.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone, you know, everyone, certainly in this business, but I think everyone generally thinks that everyone else is having a better time than them.
Turns out none of it matters. None of this matters.
Turns out everyone's having a shit time and hates themselves.
It's all full of insecurity.
You could have seen me crying watching Love Actually. If you could have looked in through the window.
Are you wanking off two men at the same time?
Well, thank you, Richard Curtis.
What the tears for?
Hey, look, I'm going to ask... we'll come back to this because it's good. But, you know, I sort of... What's interesting, I think, is both of us were in shows with other people who've gone on to be massively successful.
Yes.
And some would argue we are not doing as well, but...
Who wants to be a multimillionaire living in Hollywood making movies for Netflix? Not me. I'd want to make them for the cinema.
So I've got some new emergency questions. I thought I'd mix it up a bit, change things around this series. Not like the old days.
It's kept you on your toes, hasn't it, guys? You weren't expecting this. This is
Would
dangerous.
You rather date a woman who was a 6 foot tall vulva? Or a woman who, instead of having a vagina and all that stuff down there, had another tiny woman in her place?
Has the tiny woman got a vagina?
She's got... I think it's women all the way down.
How many women are there?
Well, infinite. It goes round, and then the smallest one is also the biggest one. And it sort of loops around.
Has the giant vulva got, like, arms?
No. Oh, can't remember the giant penis, whether it did or not. Yes. No. I don't know. I haven't thought this
if
question
through. If it's got arms, then I would say the giant vulva.
Okay. Why is the arm so important? You want to be wanked off by it? Is the fact that it's a giant vulva not enough for you?
I'm a big fan of the finger up the bum. And if she hasn't got arms, then I'll go for the woman with the infinite number of women vaginas.
Cool. Good answer.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
That's the best answer we've had to that question so far. I thought I'd nick some questions off. I've got loads of my own, but I thought I'd start looking at questions on other sites. First of all, I was on the BBC site, and one of the questions on there today was, have you got what it takes to be a spy? Do you think you've got what it takes to be a spy?
Yes.
Yeah, it's... I don't need any more than that.
No, I'm not getting any more. You see, that's how good I am at spying. I don't talk. I just give the answer and I stop talking. I've told him everything. No, I haven't.
This question comes from buzzkenya.com, where they list like 100 questions that they think are good icebreakers or good things to ask people.
In Kenya?
Well, I guess. This is one of the questions they ask you to ask, and I don't understand what this would be, what circumstances this would be in. Is there anything purple within 10 feet of you? I mean, it's interesting because that sort of implies you're just ringing people up, doesn't it, to answer it? I'm going to make friends, I'll ring them. Is there anything purple within 10 feet of you?
Well, if... Yeah, penis, yes. Very nice. But why would who is that question meant for?
I don't know. That's why I thought it was a good question.
Is that what a blind person would be asking to you?
No,
is there anything
perverse? Is it just someone testing whether you can see colours?
No, there's not.
Don't think there is. Well, there's a lot of that light spilling a purple. That's spilling a purple.
That's blue.
Hue.
Don't worry, Tony's coming on soon. He'll be fine. Don't worry, guys.
Okay. Then this is another one from thoughtcatalog.com. This is a...
That's not a website.
This is a date question.
Thoughtcatalog.com.
This is a question to ask on a date.
Okay.
What trajectory are you hoping to push yourself onto? I haven't read any of these
sexual.
Questions.
No, that's sexual.
No, I think they're asking, where do you... see yourself going in your life, but it's an odd way of trying to make it slightly sexy.
Imagine if you're going on a date, though, and you're so shit at dating that you have to go on to thoughtcatalog.com. Fuck, what am I going to ask her? I know, thoughtcatalog.com. Yeah. And they just write them down, and they go, right, I'm just going to nip off to the toilet. And they get, what trajectory do you see? What trajectory do you see yourself going on?
Imagine if you had your own interview show and you were so shit, you just Googled what? Good question. This is from MarshallJonesJr.com. 100 questions to ask people.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried sushi?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I don't like the fish. I like the other stuff.
You don't like the fish so much?
I don't like the fish so much.
One of my
youngest boy, we like going to Yo Sushi, but only on a Monday, Blue Bowl Monday, because it's much, much cheaper. Otherwise, it costs a fortune. And he'll get all of the ones with the fish on, and he'll just take the fish off and just eat the rice. Just eat all of that shit. Don't touch the fish.
You just want to send him home and eat some rice.
Yes.
It's cheaper. Okay, and I'll get back to some of my own. But this is lifehacks.io. I don't even know where that's... Where's I.O.? It's where?
Indian Ocean.
How can there be a website in the Indian Ocean?
If you could jump into a pool of something, what would it be?
Do you want me to say spunk or shit or something? What do you want me to say?
It's interesting you went straight for
spunk or shit or something. Is that what you want?
You could have anything
I'll
you want.
I'll say it.
You could have said champagne or
do you want me to say,
jelly baby.
You want me to say spunk or shit. All right, spunky shit. Is that what you want, Herring? I'll perform for you. I'm your monkey.
And this is. I'll do one more. This is from hellogiggles.com.
Oh, that sounds fun, doesn't it?
If you had the... This is genuinely a question on the internet. I could have made this one up. If you had the option of adopting a baby fox or a baby koala, which one would you choose?
Fox koalas are nasty.
Well, foxes are pretty nasty.
Ooh. A koala. I wouldn't have... why would you have either of those? I don't like animals.
That's the choice. Those are the options.
Okay, fox.
And there's no option of you can't adopt one of them.
Which would you have?
You're being forced to adopt a vicious animal.
Which one would you go for?
I mean, that's not really what this podcast's about. Why? Okay, I'll ask one of my proper questions, but that was just to get back all the...
That was a bit of fun.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All the haters stealing my questions and asking them to Jodie Foster. That's ruining it when Jodie Foster's on here and says, I've had that question before. Thanks a lot, copying your questions. Which death in 2016 has hit you the hardest of the celebrities?
All right, I'm going to say it, right? And you're going to think I'm taking the piss, and I'm not. I wasn't a fan of Bowie. I wasn't a fan of Prince. It was kind of sad, but, you know, I don't really like it. But there was one death, and when it happened, I kind of thought... it felt weird that this guy had died, and it felt like suddenly the whole cosmos was on a bit of a shift. Genuinely mean this. There was something that had shifted in the universe. It was David Guest.
Okay. Right?
And I didn't know the fella. I've met him once, and he was a very nice fella. But there was David Bowie. All right, yeah, you can kind of imagine him dying. Prince, you know, Paul Daniels was old and all. But there was something about David Guest's death that was so unexpected and so weird. And he was about to do a tour entitled David Guest is Not Dead. This is true. That was going to be the David Guest is Not Dead tour.
Yeah.
And then he died just before he went on that tour. And I found that one very uncomfortable. But honestly, I'm not really a fan of any of the people that have died.
Wow.
Paul Daniels I used to like in the 80s. He was, he was good.
The thing I enjoyed most about Paul Daniels' death.
Yeah. Whoa.
And I didn't enjoy much of it. Was when he made the announcement that he was going to die on his website. Whoever made the announcement, it was made in the font was Comic Sans, and I just don't think that is an appropriate. I think after all the things you're going to go, I'm dying of an incurable brain tumour
in hieroglyphics.
Yeah, well, you'd use a sort of Gothic or something like that if you want to be. But you wouldn't go dying of an incurable brain.
I didn't notice that. Yeah. I must have missed that.
Terry Wogan's the one Terry Wogan. Oh, yeah, can't believe Terry Wogan's dead. And out of all of them, and I wasn't a massive fan of Terry Wogan's particularly, but just the idea that Terry Wogan could not be anymore, because he still feels like he's everywhere anyway.
Yeah, but I know, but he was old.
I know, but I just can't believe he's not here anymore. Out of all of them, and there's lots of people that could.
Have there been more deaths this year, or is it. Are the press kind of,
building it up, making a big thing of it.
Are they?
Bloody David Bowie. No one would have cared about that in 2015.
Well, maybe there's a murderer going around.
There could be.
I suspect a murderer. But or just like this normal. Do this number of celebrities die every year? But they've done that thing for 2016. Oh, it's cursed.
I think genuinely it's because the entertainment television era.
Yeah.
And people becoming celebrities. That this is now reaching the point where all those people are hitting about 70.
Yeah, the first wave.
So they're all dying.
So we can expect this forever now.
Well, there's more famous people. It does feel like the big names are going, but then once you start looking for that, then people who maybe another time wouldn't have been big names. But then it's embarrassing for people who aren't quite as good as it.
Who died on the same day as Michael Jackson?
Farrah Fawcett.
Farrah Fawcett Majors died, didn't she?
But she's a big name. She if she died another day,
that that's the thing. She lost out.
But there are people who then die. You go, well, that's not good. That's not a good enough follow up to Prince, is it? I can't remember who it was who died after.
Carla Lane.
No, well, Carla Lane. There's someone who died the week after Prince. I did a joke about it. He was some actor. Then that's not good enough, is it? That's arrogant of him to die after Victoria Wood and Prince. It's got to be
Wood. Yeah,
got to be someone who got up it. Muhammad Ali. Yeah, that would have been a good one.
Yeah.
That would have been the time. I say it with the deepest of respect and the knowledge that me and Ian Lee are safe for 2016.
Well,
but all those big names from the 11 o'clock show and Fist of Fun, all in trouble.
Yeah, they're all fucked.
If you could murder one person and have an 87% chance of getting away with it, who would you kill?
Right now?
Well, there's cameras on now. If you do it right now, it would have to be a wily murder.
You know the two perfect murders.
Yeah, I don't. What are they?
One is you club someone to death with a leg of lamb.
Oh yeah, like in that's a Roald Dahl story. Yeah,
is it? And then you eat it.
Yeah.
The
Roald Dahl story, the woman clubs him to death with a leg of lamb, then gives it to the police.
Beautiful. The other one is a sword made of ice.
Yeah.
And you stab someone and then leave it. It melts. There's all that's left. There's no fingerprints. There's nothing. All that's left is a hole. And what's this water here?
And what's this big ice cube?
It melts. You do it
in the fridge. There'd have to be a big sword
shape cut out of it. Sword template.
That's weird.
Well, then I would kill the police with a leg of lamb and eat it.
Unless you're sticking ice cubes together and then sharpening that up. People look at that. Hold on, before you kill me, is that a load of, how did you make that?
Oh, fuck! Who would I kill?
Yeah.
We fantasised about killing people before.
Yeah.
Because imagine what it would feel like to take someone's life.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think this. I'm trying to be, a bit more kind of zen and shit at the moment. I don't think there's anyone I particularly... Oh, no, I know. I know exactly. I've been having a lot of trouble on a Beach Boys message board. It is the most... The Beach Boys, right? It's fun and love and surf and all that stuff, right? The most fun music there is. And nearly everybody on the Beach Boys message board is a wanker, right? Of massive proportions. And they hate me because I wrote a piece saying I quite like Mike Love, the lead singer in the Beach Boys. So they hate me for that because they'll think he's the devil, right? Brian Wilson's gone and all this shit. And someone posted a link to quite a nasty article about Brian Wilson, but quite a good one about Mike Love. And I just wrote, thanks, guys. I really enjoyed reading that. Thanks for posting. Boom, boom, they all came out of the... Oh, yeah, because it makes your shitty article look a whole lot better, you wanker. All of this stuff, right? And it got very weird, so I kill everybody on that board.
Yeah.
Everybody, without a shadow of a doubt, yeah. Fucking, why would you... The internet is, as my friend Tom, Geeky Tom, once said, it's the breeding ground for assholes and cunts, isn't it? It really is. And there are some nice people in there, but they don't shout as loudly as the assholes.
No. Well, in the old days, and again, we mentioned this backstage, but in the old days, someone would write a letter, and you go, oh, well, you throw it in the bin.
I told you the letter, but we weren't allowed to see the letters at the 11 o'clock show. And me and Daisy, one day, we found a pile of letters, and the top letter was addressed to us. And we went, oh, what's this? Is it fan mail? And someone went, no, don't read those. So we opened the top letter, and it was from a guy, and he basically said he wanted to rape Daisy. He wanted to inject me with AIDS. And then... You laughed at that. Interesting. He's not here, is he? And then he wanted to take us to a desert island where we'd get bum-raped for the rest of our short lives. That was nice. Why was I talking about him?
Because in the old days, he would not be shown that letter or it would get thrown in a bin. Because it's online, it gives it a sense of importance.
Well, now people can send that message to your phone in your pocket.
Well, they can send it directly to you.
Yeah.
But they can. But also, it has a sense of importance because it's on the internet, which it's no more meaningful than those stupid letters that in the old days you'd have ignored or just said, oh, that person's a sex pest, they're the worst person in the world. But now, there's a... And that gang mentality means that people...
I take it all too personally online. Yeah. I really do. And again, it goes back to, the 11 o'clock show and being able to dish it out but not take it. And I try not to dish it out anymore. I try not... You're finding this out at this precise moment. You get to meet people that you've slagged off on telly and generally, they're all right. Apart from one notable exception, who I won't mention. I'll tell you later on. I won't mention it because he'll slag me off again. What? No, I'm not going to tell. No, I'm not. I'm not.
I ain't going to find out. I'll tell you in the next podcast.
Okay, you can tell me.
If you come back next week.
But you slag these people off on telly, and then you meet them, and they generally they're like just nice people. They're nice, lovely people.
Yeah.
Was that where were we going with that?
I think those things they take on a sense of importance, and if you feel like the world's against you, but it's actually 50 idiots who are against you. I mean, it's much harder if it is someone saying, I'm going to come find you and rape you, or someone saying, recently Jess Phillips was getting people, I wouldn't even rape you, and then everyone got behind that going, yeah, he said he wouldn't rape you, so he wasn't having a go at you. And like people, adults genuinely arguing that tweeting someone, I wouldn't even rape you, isn't a threat. I'm not going to turn up at your house and murder your children tonight.
I've had that.
Oh, thanks for letting me know.
I've had people saying I'm going to kill your kids and stuff on Twitter and stuff like that, and it's just like that. That's hard not to take personally because they're not. But that's I had a guy that was emailing me for ages. Right, this was only a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and he would say things like I think Mark Chapman, the guy who shot John Lennon, is greatly misunderstood. I think he was a bit of a hero. And these emails went on. Basically, he threatened to shoot me. And I took it to the police. And they said, yeah, there's nothing we can do. I said, right, this guy's threatening to shoot me. He says he knows where I live. And he's going to shoot me. And they said, right, yeah, there's nothing we can do. If you spot anything suspicious, dial 999. And I said, what? Like, if I spot a man pulling a gun out of his coat and aiming at me, that's when I should call you, is it? They went, yeah, that would be, we'll see if we can do something. Yeah. And they didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Well, it just... They weren't fans of the 11 o'clock show. That was it.
But, Josie Long recently had, like, someone sent her a load of pictures of murder victims. I think Fred West victims and other victims with her picture at the end of it. And she looked at the police, and the police couldn't do anything with that. But they can do, you know, they can if they can be bothered to do stuff about it. They can if they. It just takes a lot of work to.
Depends which copy you talk to. Some are good, and some don't care about that kind of stuff. But I don't understand. That Josie Long thing was horrible, man, wasn't it?
Yeah, but there's lots of really horrible things. The thing is, most people aren't, you know, aren't going to. Most people who warn you aren't going to do anything about them. The people you have to worry about are the people who don't warn you.
But then you get, things like Lily Allen, who had the fellow had been, you know, sending her messages and stuff for years, and then turned up in her bedroom one night. You know, so there are fruitcakes out there.
Anyway, you know, definitely. There was a girl in Japan, Japanese pop star, who a guy had sent her a gift, and he felt she hadn't been as responsive about that gift as possible, and so it didn't quite kill her, but he nearly killed her. I think he attacked her and stabbed her and stuff. So yeah, I mean, these fuckers are the worst. I can't believe I got nine. Look at that guy. I've got through 9 series. He sat there every single time. You think if anyone's just going to pull out a gun? As long as we get it on camera, that's all. That's all I ask. At Tackline. I know them by their internet, Twitter handles.
That's nice. Yeah. But that's good about what you're doing here is that it's kind of very intimate, and you have a kind of a nice relationship with a significant number of your fans. No? Fuck them. Okay, good. Fair enough.
They're all right. Some of them are all right. I'm like a dad from the 1970s. I can't show them that I like them, really. Thanks for the money, guys. Cheers. Got my old Apple Watch there. Thanks for that. Cheers. I couldn't afford the swanky one. I just had to get the basic level. Please buy more tickets. Next. So you're a big fan of the Monkees.
Yes.
And you know Mickey DeLenz.
Yes.
Have you talked to him about Metal Mickey and his part in Metal Mickey very much?
Not very much. No. We've not sat down
and
discussed.
That's mainly what I would talk about.
Metal Mickey.
I would wait a bit. I'd go, oh, I love the Monkees. I love that. Last Train to Clarkstown. That was good. Yeah. That's what I'd do. And then I go, what happened with Metal Mickey? How was that?
It was good, Metal Mickey.
It was good. Mickey DeLenz directed some episodes of Metal Mickey. Do you remember Metal Mickey?
Yeah. I
who
also
doesn't remember Metal Mickey?
It was. I also used to think he looked like Pigsy in Monkey Magic.
Yeah.
And I was convinced as an 8-year-old kid that it was the same guy.
Right.
And that I made up this whole world in my head where he had a contract where he could only appear in things with the word monkey in the title. And I genuinely believed that until I was about 15 years old. And then I realised it was a Chinese fella in...
Yeah.
Or Japanese
Have you talked to Mickey DeLenz about that?
I've not mentioned that to him, though. Although when we went to see them at the Royal Albert Hall a few years ago, my wife said, what's the name of the Chinesey one? I said, what? She said, one of them's Chinese. I said, no, it's not. She said, one of them's Chinese. She said, no, they're not. And Mickey DeLenz comes out. She went, look, him, he's Chinese. He's not. He's just got a very tired face. He's got a very tired face that gives an impression of China.
Well, that's the second most racist thing you've said this year. So... The first most racist thing you said this year was when you were on Pointless Celebrities.
Oh, for
and you had to guess the song or the pop group based on a picture, and there was a picture of two Indian girls in front of some spice. So there's quite an obvious thing, and you said Corner Shop.
Now, here's the thing, Richard, which is why you're a racist and I'm not. I didn't notice they were Asian, as I don't see colour. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah, I did. I tried to outthink. I was pointless. I was trying to be cleverer than pointless, you know. And I said, Corner Shop, fucking hell, that was outrageous, wasn't it? Outrageous. I didn't see the spices. I didn't see they were Asian. I just thought 1997, the Brit Award, the Corner Shop were big then. I think they were nominated for a Brit Corner Shop. Massive racist. Massive racist.
Yeah. So you've been releasing... Let's get back to the Monkees.
You don't have to.
No, I like to. You've been releasing rare Monkees records. And
only I'm interested in that, though.
I know, but that's amazing.
No, it's not. No, you're doing your sincere face.
I'm sincerely amazed. Are you, weren't you upset about David Bowie dying because you like the other David Jones more?
Well, that's why he changed his name, because of David Jones from the Monkees.
I cried curse of being called David Jones.
I cried when David Jones died.
Yeah.
I was singing Daydream Believer to my little boy to get him to sleep when I got a text from a friend saying, oh, bad news about David Jones.
Yeah.
I was thinking, oh, God, no, he's a paedophile, he's a paedophile. Genuinely, it was at that period when... You know, it was that time when everyone was a paedophile. And then another one said, oh, I'm really sorry about David. I think, oh, God, no. What is, and I Googled it and he died. And, and I was singing that.
Do you think it was you singing that song that killed him?
Could have been the thing that just pushed him. I was heartbroken when David Jones died. I had a wee next to him once. There's nothing there. It was at a urinal. There was an empty urinal, and then there was someone else.
Yeah.
I went to the cubicle, and I thought, no, fuck it, this is my only chance to have a wee next to a monkey. So I went. So I walked out of the cubicle, and then I went in between them. All right, Dave.
Do you get nerves from when you? I can't go in the urinals often because I'm too nervous. So if I was standing next to someone that I admired a lot, I think I wouldn't be able to wee.
Oh no, I was looking at his willy.
Yeah.
As you would do.
Yeah.
I was looking at his willy.
So you weren't weeing, or were you weeing and looking, or were you looking at his willy?
Stroking one out.
Yeah.
It was the most erotic moment of my life. Now I get why some men do that at urinals. It was wonderful. No, I didn't. I don't remember the specifics of the actual wee, but I remember being stood next to him while he was.
And what was his willy like?
It was nice. Yeah, it was nice, beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, lovely.
Yeah. It's not, I think now he's dead. We should remember it. It seems a respectful thing to do.
It just seemed very respectful
to describe in detail, wouldn't it?
No, I'm not going to go into detail.
Out of respect for him.
It was a private moment between two men having a slash.
Well, between one man and a man who wasn't really aware he was being spider. He was innocently trying to wee. Going, I wish it was the 60s.
He was aware I was spying on him. He was aware.
He was cool with it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll do Dirty Britcom Confession. You have one Dirty Britcom Confession. Are you aware of this site?
No.
It's a site where people can go and leave their sexual fantasies about comedians.
Oh, yeah.
And you have one person who's gone to that site.
Oh, that's nice.
And what that one person has said...
This will be romantic. Looking forward to this.
...is whenever I listen to Ian Lee on the radio, I spend the whole time imagining him taking me doggy style and pushing my face into the pillow.
Wow.
What I like about that is your shows are quite long.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just the entire time. Just
gosh.
You take some concentration, you see. I'm still imagining, God, would I be suffocating yet? I don't know.
I used to get a woman who write to me stuff like that. Yeah. She would phone up, and she was obviously nuts. And she'd say, oh, you would say things just as I thought them. And I would say, well... Yeah, because I said them and then you thought them. She goes, no, literally at the same time, you know, you'd say a word and I'd be thinking that word. And then she would write me letters about how she used to pleasure herself whilst listening to the show and looking in the mirror. It was horrible.
Yeah. I hope she's listening now.
Well, I she was quite old. This is about 10 years ago, so I suspect she's no longer with us.
Okay.
Thank Christ. Only one entry.
One entry. I was impressed.
I'm talking about the specifics of this event. There's only one entry.
Just like it's a long time to be imagining just a very specific thing.
And also, the phone-in show, sometimes it's quite miserable.
Yeah.
So, people talking about suicide and shit like that. So, I mean, maybe that's what gets them off.
Maybe.
I don't know.
If they're imagining that you're still doing the show while you're doing it, so it's sort of rutting.
Tell me what it felt like when you wanted to kill yourself.
Get in the pillow! I've told you! Head in the pillow!
Oh dear, that's a very specific nice desire. Well, if that person, male or female, wants to get in touch, then please send me an email. Let's work this out. Let's work something out, guys.
Let's talk about the Persuasionists. Andy McCaich was very keen to hear more about the Persuasionists.
Oh yeah, what do you want to know?
What did you think? Well, you asked Adam what he thought of it because you're both in it. And you what? So what do you? What is your honest opinion of the Persuasionists?
Right, so sitcom that we did the year that Michael Jackson died, and I can never remember. Was that 6 years ago? 7 years
when
ago?
When I did Hit the Moustache. 2007, 2009. I definitely 2000. It's after 2007.
No, she said 7 years ago.
Oh, okay, 2009.
And
still counting.
It was waiting for the comeback. It was a sitcom that was done by people, you know, by Ian Morris and Damon Beasley, who did In Between Us, and They put me in it, and it had Anne Buxton in it, and Daisy Haggard, and loads of people.
Simon Farnaby
was in it, and Jared Christmas. And it's a really good cast, but the script was shit. That was the thing, you know. And as we were doing it, there were some funny bits in it, right? And I don't think it was as bad as everyone said it was, but it wasn't. It wasn't brilliant, you know. As we were doing it, I was thinking, this is weird. It doesn't feel very funny. Mm. But you know, what did I know? I'd never acted before. And I didn't know what I was doing, and I trusted the people that were making it, and we did it, and it flopped terribly, and it got a terrible mauling it wasn't as bad, but it wasn't very good.
Well, I tried to look up on YouTube, yeah, so I could watch a bit, because I didn't really watch it at the time.
No one did. I mean,
there's a bit where I thought it was a genuine thing. It's worth going on. It's worth going on YouTube to see it. There's a bit called "The Persuasionist: The Best Bits."
Yeah.
and it says from the. It looks like it's from the time. It says clips from the Fantastic. It looks really genuine, and it has the whole opening titles. And then Daisy Hager comes in, says something. It cuts to Adam saying fantastic. Something. Someone else saying something, and then the end credits
Brilliant.
But it's worth looking at. I've ruined it now, obviously, if you want to.
But I enjoyed doing it, and we got paid a lot of money for it. And it was fun to do. It was fun working with those guys. But it was a stinker. You know, it was.
I think it's weird. I've seen a bit with you and Adam in it. And I think for me the weird thing is it's impossible to escape that it's you and Adam. So
yeah.
It's because it's a someone people you recognise from other things.
Yeah, and it's like an old-fashioned studio sitcom.
And Adam's playing it quite. He's acting like he's in a sitcom, which is quite unusual for him. But
I couldn't act. All right, and we did. There were six episodes, and the first episode we did about three or four times over a period of months as different pilots, right? Yeah. So I knew the script for that really well, and we record it on a Thursday. Then on the Sunday we'd get the script for next Thursday's, right? So I had to learn a whole show in 4 or 5 days, and they kept changing, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. It'd been years since I'd had to learn a script because 11 o'clock show was all on autocue, so I hadn't learned a script for 15 years, and we had to learn a script, you know, new script every 4 days. And so I wasn't acting. I was literally just sitting there clinging on to the words, thinking, right, what are the next words? They finish speaking. So I say this bit, and then I sit. And it was, you know, so I didn't. It was a very tense experience. It was a stinker.
It's a weird thing, though, because with comedy, for some reason, people get furious about it if it doesn't hit for them.
Yeah.
So if it was a drama, if you'd done Mad Men instead of The Persuasionist, and it hadn't worked, people would have gone, oh, well, that didn't work, that's a shame. Yeah. But people are furious about it.
They get very angry.
There are so many factors that go into making a good sitcom. And it's the script, it's whether everyone's gelling.
Yeah.
I think, from the tiny bits I've seen, I just think it looks like they've picked, actors out of a hat rather than thinking who's good. Not everyone's all right,
but together
it just doesn't work.
They tried to make the IT crowd again, but then you've already got the IT crowd, so why would you do it? It wasn't good. And then I got another mauling for that. I've given up on TV. TV gave up on me about then. And I gave up on TV about 3 years ago. I finally realised they're not going to come knocking for me. I don't like it anyway. I like the money. We're both saying, you know, TV pays better than radio and stuff. But they're not good. I'm not going to get a proper... I get asked to do, like you were saying on the Saturday show, I've been on there and it's fun. If I'm free and it's not going to humiliate me too much... I'll do it, you know. I'm doing the talking head programs again because it's 500 quid for sitting in a room for an hour talking about toys or the 90s or whatever. I don't really give a shit what people think about me on TV anymore. If it pays all right and I'm free and I keep my clothes on, then I'll do it, you know. that is pretty much what it boils down to. I'll do it.
But TV's also changed into quite a different beast, so that's the only things you can really do now. I mean,
yeah.
It's I think as a comedian, you've.
I'm not.
Well, you've straddled lots of. I can say that. I wouldn't say you're a comedian, which is what he says to me in the Edinburgh Fringe. But no, you know, you're doing lots of. There are only these opportunities. That's what I get offered, like talking head things.
I don't do panel shows. I fucking hate them. Yeah. I did a few and they were horrible. I did. They Think It's All Over. That's a sports one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I didn't. This was really early on in the 11 o'clock show, and I hated it. I didn't know anything about sport, and they're just like horrible boys' clubs. Yeah. I remember Gary Lineker turning to me halfway. They come in early in the day with all the jokes. All the jokes are written out. And Rory McGrath would just go, I'm having that. And you get left with these shitty gags. And halfway through the record, and I was so humiliated. Gary Lineker just turned to me and went, "Who the fuck are you?" Like that. And I was just like, "Oh, Jesus, I just want to disappear." And I've done a few panel shows since. I did 8 out of 10 Cats, and I had a horrible time on there. I upset one of the panel members, and they were just... It was during... it was on the 7-7, the day of the 7-7 bombings, right? And... I didn't make a joke about it. I got a call. My friend was producing it, Dom, and I got a call about 4 o'clock in the afternoon saying, we're recording 8 out of 10 Cats tonight. We've had two people drop out because of the 7-7 bombings. Would you come in at last minute and do it? I was like, yeah, of course I will. So I went in. I'd missed the dress rehearsal. I'd missed the allocation of all of the gags. And I can't write gags, save my life. And I got there about 7, and it was being recorded in Television Centre, but it was weird. There was no audience. They wouldn't let the audience in because... BBC was a terror threat. So it was an empty studio, and we were there. And I upset one of the comedians to the point where, when it was my turn to do my piece, he went, "Go on then, Ian, go on." And I'd start a line, "Go on, this is going to be funny, I'm looking forward to this, go on then." And I just went, "Do you know what? I don't want to be here. And I just was silent for the rest of the show. It was so uncomfortable that Jimmy Carr afterwards phoned me up and he said, "I'm so sorry about that. That was atrocious what happened." Yeah. And that was the last time I ever did a panel show. I hate it because it's all you've got to get your elbows in and get your dicks out.
I think there are different ones. There are ones that are like that and there are ones that aren't. I mean, there are some sort of more laddie ones, which is about the competitiveness.
I don't like it. I don't like any of that stuff. I thought you would have enjoyed that. Thrived in that kind of world.
No, I like the ones where you can. The Radio 4 ones are great because they generally have a much better male female ratio, which I think really helps get rid of that, and it becomes more, therefore becomes more chatty and about people supporting each other and telling your stories and joining in, which is, that's what I'm more interested in. Rather than, I remember watching they think it's all over on the, when you go to the TV centre, you can watch what's going on in the studio on a feed, we were up working on some TV show while that was on, and I was watching it going through, and Sean Mia, who's a stand-up comic, was the warm-up guy.
Okay, yeah.
And he was coming on, warming up the audience, and Lee Hurst could see Sean Mio getting laughs in the warm, in the bit between the rounds, and clearly couldn't stand the fact that even at that point he came down as the star of the show and started bantering between them and then took over the warm up from the warm up guy.
God.
And I just thought that's sort of typical of that.
Yeah.
You know, that they're so competitive that they can't even let someone get the last one, which isn't even going to be in the show.
So. Vinnie Jones, I was on with Vinnie Jones, and his comedic piece was to threaten to take me outside and beat the crap out of me. And I was like, I'll sort you out. I was thinking, oh, fuck, this is horrible. But I thought it's what you had to do. I thought you had to go and do that thing. It was Harry Thompson, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Who was producing it then. He was brilliant, you know, and he was doing the 11 o'clock show, and he was a genius producer. He's dead now, unfortunately, but he was a genius. And he convinced me to go on twice. He convinced me to go on, and I just, I fucking hated it.
They're very difficult. I mean, I think they're sort of getting a bit more...
The Radio 4 ones are nice because you're right, I've not been on them, but I listen to them and you get the impression that it is more of a shared experience, and it is less, you know, the ego seem to be held in check quite considerably. But I don't even watch them on, I don't even watch telly anymore. I don't really watch much telly, but they're all just who can shout the loudest, and I don't like any of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, so then you're doing a lot of radio.
Yes.
And you're the wild man of radio, and that's because you've left jobs a bit, and
I've been sacked from loads of jobs.
Yeah, you've been sacked from jobs. You were sacked from your last job before Talk Radio.
I was sacked from the BBC. I was doing BBC Local Radio. You know, I disappeared into the wilderness for a few years and did BBC Local Radio. And I got sacked from there because I had an argument with these horrible right-wing Christians, this horrible group, Christian Concern. They're nasty. And they want to ban abortion, make abortion illegal, ban homosexuality, all of this stuff, and make it legal to bully people for being gay, all this stuff. Nasty. And they came on and they were talking about this... Reverend Barry Trahorn, who was working as a gardener in a prison for sex offenders, and he'd done a bit of lay preaching, and he got suspended because he said that being gay was a sin, and you know, sinners go to hell and all this stuff. And we had this lawyer on from Christian Concern, and she said, "Ian, I don't hate gays, I love gays, that's why I want to save them from eternal damnation." And I went nuts, right? This is on a BBC local radio program at 6:20 in the morning, and I went nuts, and I just said, "You're disgusting, you're a bigot, what you're saying is disgusting, and you know, I think you're dangerous, and you're horrible, and blah, blah, blah." And they after the show, they put a little button on their website that said, yet again, Christianity is being attacked by the BBC. It wasn't an attack on Christianity, it was an attack on arseholes. Yet again, Christianity is being attacked by the BBC. Click this button to get this presenter the sack. And they, you know, only about 160 people clicked a button. And but it was enough for people. It was enough for people to for the BBC to panic and to ask me to leave.
Yeah,
BBC. You know, I love the BBC, but they wouldn't stick by me because I called a bigot.
Yeah, but it did seem weird. I mean, like I think I'd heard it obviously when it because it was playing at the time, and you know, I think. Yeah, maybe you're overstepping your mark as an impartial.
Yeah.
But then if you listen to, like, even the Radio 2 main Jerry and Vine show, he's always given his stupid right.
We've got another text. We've got another text from a tuck driver. I've had to pull over Jeremy with tears in my eyes. That's the constant.
So, you know, that's what good radio is, to get opinions out there. If she's giving her opinion, you should be able to give your opinion as well. But that, you know, so it seemed
impartiality was what they 6 months later they eventually told me they'd let me go for. But my boss phoned me up 2 weeks later and I said, why? Some of the stuff I'm not allowed to talk about legally. But I said, why haven't I got a job anymore? And she couldn't answer the question. Took me asking the question six times for her to say, well, you lost your temper, Ian. That was never mentioned in the report.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm gutted. I love that job. And, yeah, I'm disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, but the BBC are obviously very sensitive at the moment and worried about losing their light, you know. I mean,
they should stick up for gay people and bisexual people.
They definitely should.
People.
It makes me, you know, I'm very upset that they're so worried about losing whatever freedom they have that they're just giving away their own freedom.
And it wasn't an attack on Christianity at all. No. It's not my thing, but if that's your thing, man, then that's cool. It wasn't, you know, I'm not anti-religion. I had loads of people afterwards tweeting me saying, come and join our anti-Christianity, our anti-Muslim. You would never say that to a Muslim, I got. And actually, I did say it to a Muslim. I did have a Muslim fellow once because they were... Anyway. But all these anti-religious groups kind of get... I said, no, it's not an anti-religion thing at all. You know, I'm not... I just anti-bigotry and hatred. And the BBC should have had a fucking spine and stood by me and said, yeah, you know, what you said, you perhaps... said it, you know, in perhaps slightly too forceful a way, but the message that you said was great. Yeah. Almost a spontaneous round of applause, guys. Good. Almost a spontaneous.
But then I think you've got a lot of backing, and obviously it's led on to other stuff, and you've got this...
I've got a better job. Yeah. I mean, in between that and getting a better job, I had a breakdown, and, you know, and I grew a beard, and, you know, all of those shit things. But, yeah, I've got a better job, and it's much better.
You know, it's not just on in three counties, is it, your radio show?
It's on across the country, on DAB.
Across the world.
Probably two counties getting it. But, yeah, it's good.
But yeah, so I mean, you're obviously very sensitive, and it upset you a lot. And
yes,
I mean, yeah.
Oh well.
Hey, I'm sorry I said that stuff about you.
I've not had one offer from any gay men as a result of me sticking up for you guys. I stood up for you guys. And not one of you has come forward and offered to show me what I was standing up for.
We don't know if the doggy style pillow person is male or female.
See you afterwards.
I think you might regret that. He's a live wire.
Fuck it. You know anything these days. Yeah, sort it out.
I mean, you should also listen to the Adam Buxton podcast, and we should discuss your...
It's a little bit more downbeat than this one.
It is, but, you know...
It's a little bit downbeat.
You know, he doesn't talk about children with cancer falling out of bed. That's what I've got over
it's
him.
Even more downbeat than
that. That's what I've got over him. So, you've got Mickey DeLenz's new single.
Yes.
I can buy that. Where can I buy that?
You don't need to plug this shit.
I want
to
buy it.
But no one here is interested in that. Literally. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on Amazon.
Wow.
Yeah, you can get it there, man.
I'm not going to buy it.
Seriously.
Is it only on vinyl, or can you get it on CD?
It's only on vinyl, but it'll be coming out on CD later in the year. But we're not telling anyone it's coming out on CD later in the year because we're not 100% sure.
Okay.
So we've got an actual proper record label, right? We've had about four or five albums out, and it turns out running a record label is really, really expensive.
Yeah.
Really expensive, and you don't make any money. You just seem to constantly pay money, and I'm skint as a result of it. Don't tell my wife. Don't, seriously. If she knew... Well, how's the record label? Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, we sold loads. Yeah, quids in. We're several thousand pounds down, but it doesn't matter.
It's good to be doing something you love.
It's good to be chucking money at something.
It is. Well, look at this load of shit.
They've chucked. They've chucked money at you.
I don't even have Mickey DeLenz in this. This is 35 grand, this series. It's going to cost me.
Gosh, well,
we'll get it back.
You've got off to a real boom as well with this.
All right, we will. I'll ask you one more new emergency question.
Okay. I feel like I've let you down.
No, you have really.
No,
haven't.
I feel like I have. I feel
you
like
really
I,
haven't.
Afterwards, you'll go, yeah, see, I was right 19 years ago. He was a prick. He was a prick. I knew it. You phone up Stu. We were right. Let's get back together just to tear him another one.
I don't know. You know, maybe I got the wrong Lee was the prick at the time. What's the
he
best?
He said you'd say that.
What's the best museum you've ever been to?
Oh, fucking hell, museums! Why did you start with museums? I like all the big popular ones. The Science Museum's awesome. Last time I was at the Science Museum, there was an arsehole of a woman, though. Yeah, there was a really nasty woman, right? My two little boys, they're only 6 and 4 years old, and they're playing on this thing, right? And I'm really conscious of, too conscious of my kids not having too many goes on things when there are other children waiting to play on stuff, mm-hmm. right? So we waited ages and ages while these little kids had like 15, 20 goes on this thing. And my boys were having their goes and they're on their third go. And I could see this woman with her kids. And I said, all right, guys, one more go after this. And then we're going to, a short little game. Then we'll let the next people have a go. And this woman said really loudly, oh, what rude children you've got, not letting people have a go. I went, I beg your pardon. She went, look at your rude children. They've been stood there for ages. And I said, I beg your pardon. And this is their fourth go. Oh, you're a terrible father. And then I did a thing that I was fucking furious, right? Really furious. But I didn't want to argue in front of my kids, right? And she was just shouting really loudly, oh, look at these. And I did this thing, and I really wish I hadn't done it. I got my phone out and started filming her, right? And then she got her phone out and started filming me. And so we stood there like this, right, filming each other. And then we had this massive argument. And I said, how dare you criticise my children? Well, you're a very rude man. And then my youngest started crying, and the eldest got very upset, and I'm holding the youngest. And this woman was shouting at me. Her children were ugly as well. Really ugly children. And I didn't say that. I could have said it, and I didn't say it. In the end, I just went, look at my boy, he's crying. I hope you're proud of yourself. And I walked off. So, the Science Museum.
Yeah. Well, it's been very lovely talking to you, Ian. No hard feelings about...
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you very much for coming. Ian Lee, ladies and gentlemen. Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Ian Lee. The music is by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for putting up with us as usual. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Strike for putting this out. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, especially Orange Mark, who hasn't had any orange juice for a long time. This show was produced and is produced by Ben Walker. It is a Go Faster Strike, Sky Potato and Fuzz production. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this, do think about contributing some money at gofasterstripe.com/badges. Or you can come and see me on tour. I've got a new tour just revving up of a best of show called Richard Herring the Best. Oh, that sounds like I'm the best. Oh, what a mistake. If you go to richherring.com/gigs, you can find out all about where that's coming. And there will be a tour all through the autumn and the spring. So book ahead. It went quite well this time. Thanks very much if you came to see Happy Now. It went quite well. Thanks, see you next time, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.